You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, and welcome to A Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Today, my guest is Graham Hancock. Graham is the best-selling author of The Sign and the Seal, Fingerprint of the Gods, Fingerprints of the Gods, and Heaven's Mirror. He teamed up with Robert Bovall to write The Message of the Sphinx, and is a frequent traveler to all the sacred sites around the world, researching the truth about our history. His books have sold more than 5 million copies worldwide and have been translated into 27 languages. His latest book is a novel titled Entangled, which we'll be talking about today. He recently participated in the groundbreaking film directed by Ekkan Derevi entitled Earth Pilgrims. We may also touch upon his book Supernatural, which is an account of the ancient teachers of mankind and the use of natural substances to cross into other realms. So let's welcome Graham to the show now. Hi, Graham. How are you?
Hi. Good to be with you.
Well, you know, I have to tell you before we get started that I couldn't stop reading Entangled. I literally couldn't put it down.
I'm really glad to hear that. Then it means I've done my job well as a novelist.
Oh, absolutely. And the characters are so beautifully drawn, and of course they're all good characters, but I especially appreciate a Dr. Bannister for personal reasons.
Yeah.
And the themes that you get into are really cosmic themes, and they're relevant today because it's the battle of good and evil.
Yes. The book is all about the battle of good against evil, and it's played out in two different time frames, which nevertheless interconnect, because I would say a very quantum physics view of time in this novel, that time is not an arrow, it's not a kind of straight line with cause and effect only moving in one direction, but that rather it's a series of cycles and spirals that intersect and cut across one another, and knotted segments of time that are bearing influence upon one another. So the two principal characters are both young women. They're the heroes of this story. Rhea in the Stone Age is a human being like you and I, and anatomically modern human beings, because anatomically modern human beings did live on the planet 24,000 years ago in the Stone Age. But the other principal Stone Age character is a young Neanderthal man called Brindle, and the Neanderthals are our cousins, and they became extinct mysteriously 24,000 years ago. And the book opens with Rhea rescuing Brindle from an attack by members of her own clan, because they call the Neanderthals the Uglies, and they hate them and despise them. And Rhea rescues him and goes with him to his people. And while this is happening, an extraordinary invasion of their lands is taking place from another human people called the Illimani, who are led by a demon, a demonic force who has taken a human body, and his name is Sulpa, and his mission is to wipe out all goodness from the world. And in this novel, I don't conceive of the Neanderthals as knuckle-dragging ape men. I conceive of them as full of beauty and truth and goodness, and they're a kind of light for the world. They're gentle and loving and compassionate. They communicate telepathically. And the reason that the demon wants to mislead human beings into destroying them is that he gains a psychic charge by doing that, a sufficient psychic charge to manifest fully in the 21st century, in our time. And if he can do that, then he will be in a position to weave the doom of all mankind forever. All our potential will be destroyed. Everything will be lost. When the story opens, he's not yet fully in physical form in the modern age. He's more like a dark cloud or an influence that influences and misdirects and misleads people. But if he succeeds in bringing about the extermination of the Neanderthals in the Stone Age, then he'll be able to jump forward across time and take a body in the 21st century, and that will really be the end of us. So stopping him killing off the Neanderthals in the Stone Age is the essential jeopardy of the story, and this is the role of the young heroine Rhea in the Stone Age. And her sister in time, as I refer to her, is a young woman in modern Los Angeles, 21st century Los Angeles, named Leone. And she has already been a victim of this demonic influence in the 21st century because her parents are members of the cult of this demon. He's called Jack in the 21st century. And she's been subjected to horrific abuse during her childhood, which she's largely been persuaded to forget about. But in a near-death experience that she undergoes at the beginning of the story, she has an encounter with an angelic and good supernatural being, who I call the Blue Angel, who reveals to her the truth about herself and sets her on her mission to join forces with Rhea across the barrier of time to defeat this demon and make sure that he does not bring about the end of the world.
Yes, yes. Well, all of this is, you know, very resonant because I can see parallels to our own time today.
Oh, yeah.
And obviously, you meant it to be that way.
Very much so. Very, very much so.
Yes.
And
Those things are really going on.
Yeah, they are. We live in dark times, and demonic forces are at work, and humanity today is being misled, and our faculties are being closed down. There's such extensive mind control in our societies, a dominance of individual consciousness that I do believe that most people go through their lives really quite unaware of what is being done to them.
Absolutely.
And just to branch off on the side from this, I've been doing a lot of travel around the United States in the last month, and a lot of flying from airport to airport.
Uh-huh.
And it's very clear to me, both in the U.S. And in Britain, that we are doing a terrible trade of liberty for security. And a horrendous habit of obedience is being inculcated into us. I'm thinking of this, these so-called naked body scanners in airports.
Yes. Yes.
Although we have the option to opt out, 99% of passengers just queue up without question and have their body blasted with X-rays. And I discovered that if you do opt out, a directive seems to have been given to security staff in all airports to make the opt-out process extremely painful and unpleasant. So the physical search that they shout, opt out, and guards gather around you, and they do a very almost abusive, rape-like physical search, very humiliating and in public with a lot of bracing of rubber gloves and angry looks. And I can see that what they're doing there is they're making the human right to opt out so uncomfortable and so unpleasant that the few of us who do choose to opt out will eventually opt in. And in this way, creating an absolute habit of obedience to government controls. And I think that a habit of obedience is not what we need in the world today. We need free and responsible, independent adults who are capable of making up their own minds about things.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I totally agree with you. And I read an account of that opt-out process, and I couldn't help but think that this is what they're doing on every level that we can conceive of as far as growing your own food. They're working on laws to not allow you to do that.
Yeah.
Cutting back on organic farming so that it's eventually blocked.
Yeah.
It just goes on and on. The chemtrails.
It goes on and on. Consider these mass vaccination campaigns. How quite regardless of the issue of how dangerous these vaccinations can be, what I see even worse is, again, that we're being put into an automatic habit of obedience to state authority.
Yes.
And
yes,
simply
absolutely.
Saying yes. And to my mind, this goes completely against the American way. It's against everything that the Founding Fathers stood for. You know, and when I look at this happening to a beautiful, wonderful country like the United States, which has been a beacon of freedom and liberty in the world for so long, it makes me very sad, and I can't help feeling that something has gone terribly, terribly wrong.
Yes. Yes, I agree with you. And it does seem that there are larger forces at play that are basically closing the noose, and they're working at it overtime at this point. And I wonder if that might have something to do with the 2012 material that we are all familiar with and the closing of so many cycles. It seems that they're trying to basically, where we were born as slaves, we've always been indentured as slaves,
mm-hmm.
all of us,
mm-hmm.
but we've been allowed to at least think that we weren't slaves. But
yeah.
Now they're actually getting us to the point where they're taking the final step and closing the gap, and we will know that we are slaves, and then we
yeah.
will be microchipped, told what to do, and there won't be any option to, as you said, opt out, because they'll make it so painful.
This then is the end of all human potential, all
Absolutely.
Creativity, all imagination, all individuality will be crushed by this process, and worst of all, this automatic habit of obedience.
Yes,
and of saying
yes,
yes. Now, when the authorities are relatively benign, you know, that may not result in horrendous consequences. But 20 or 30 years down the line, we don't know what kind of governments we're going to have. And if we're all ground down into a complete habit of obedience, we'll say yes to anything.
Yes.
And I think it's a terrifying prospect. yeah, we are. It's already happening. It's already happening
yeah.
now. And I do see. I've always felt that the fundamental dynamic of the universe is the struggle of good against evil, and that's why Entangled is all about that, and that in this struggle the special position of the human being is the ability to make choices, unlike other animals with whom we share this planet. Our consciousness has evolved to a stage where we can actually make very fundamental choices. And by sending us to sleep, by encouraging us in the habit of obedience, by denying us our responsibility as adults, by devolving all responsibility onto the state, we are not able to choose anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're not able to choose, we can't grow. And
mm-hmm.
we can't learn, and we can't develop. And I actually do see a dark force behind that. Which
yes.
wants to deny us our potential.
Yes, I do too. And many of my guests see the same force, and many of the listeners.
Yeah.
And it's,
well, this is the great hope, and this is the other side of the story in America. And here I see more hope for America than Britain, because in Britain we've for a long time had the habit of saying yes to authority
mm-hmm.
without question. But in America there still is this strong spirit of independence. I wouldn't say that it's throughout the entire population, but I would say that there are enough people in America who feel strongly about their independence and their right to responsible decisions as adults, and who are able to take initiatives at a local level, that something still might be done about this,
mm-hmm.
about this horrendous process that's taking place. It's a very big country. There's, what, 300 million people here. And
yes.
and amongst those people, there perhaps are enough who are free thinkers and independent minded to keep the fire of independence burning.
Yes, and of consciousness,
and of
awareness.
Consciousness. Exactly,
because it seems our consciousness is being eroded daily by this constant pursuit of materialism and, you know, fragmentation into a unity consciousness, not unity consciousness, but individual consciousness, where each person is being sold to. And we're consumers, and everywhere you look, we're bombarded with rays and radiation and harp and frequencies that we aren't even aware of, let alone the ones that we are aware of on television, and even those have subliminal messages in them.
Exactly, so, and indeed we're bombarded with 24-hour-a-day reality TV, which is turning our brains to mush. This is again eroding freedom of choice. I would never have imagined, you know, that we would come to this pass. There's been, you know, 2,000 years of struggle to create true democracy, and we get to that point, and then we just throw it all away, and devolve everything upon the state and upon big business and upon industry and upon the military powers that be, and become incapable of thinking independently or acting independently. And you're right. I mean, consciousness is at the heart of this. Consciousness is what it is fundamentally what it is to be human. It's the most precious gift of our humanity, is this incredible miracle that we call consciousness, because no scientist today can actually tell us how this few pounds of jelly inside our skulls that we call our brains, how that transmutes into feelings, into emotions, into the appreciation of beauty and love, into our reactions to a beautiful sonata or symphony, in our reactions to a glorious sunset. This cannot be explained in purely physical and material terms, which is the only way that science operates. And although, you know, science has certain prejudices about consciousness, this is why most scientists don't believe in life after death, for example.
Right.
Because their view is that consciousness is just like an accidental byproduct of physical activities in the brain. And therefore, they believe that when the brain dies, consciousness also dies. And that view is spread very widely in our society as though it were a fact, but it's not a fact. It's an opinion, and there's a huge amount of contrary evidence to this, and that's why I do explore a near-death experience of Leonie, my modern character, at the beginning of the novel, it becomes clear that the brain does not generate consciousness. The brain may well be a receiver or a transceiver of consciousness, rather like the relationship between a TV set and a TV signal. So if you break the TV set, you don't break the signal. The signal continues.
Right.
And that's what I believe consciousness is. And it's why I use altered states of consciousness in the novel as the mechanism by which the two young heroines are able to move back and forward in time. Once we leave the confines of the material body, we are able to travel effortlessly throughout the universe and throughout time itself.
Well, so many people have had that experience naturally, and near-death experiences. I've had, you know, Daniel Brinkley and a lot of others who have had that kind of experience, or out of body. I myself have had numerous experiences in my early years on LSD and mushrooms and psilocybin and various cacti. And I can tell you for a fact that this is not the only world there is.
Yeah, absolutely. And me too. And you mentioned my last nonfiction book, Supernatural, and it was really while I was researching that I entered on the path that has now led me to write this novel, because when I was researching Supernatural, which is about shamanism and altered states of consciousness, I've always felt as an author that it's important to put myself into the story I'm writing. And, and in order to research that subject properly, I went down to the Amazon and I sat with shamans in the Amazon, and I drank with them the powerful visionary brew that they call ayahuasca, the vine of souls, of which the active ingredient is dimethyltryptamine, DMT, a most interesting substance, which is in fact produced in the pineal gland in the human brain, and is also present in many plants and animal species all around the world, and we don't know. There's no scientific explanation for what the function of DMT is, but I believe that what it does is it shifts the receiver wavelength of the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And allows us to gain direct access to other levels of reality. We're normally in our society so focused and blocked in on the material world and on the mm-hmm. cares and concerns of everyday life and on all these messages to make us passive producers and consumers of material goods
mm-hmm.
that we live in an illusion that that's all there is.
And
when people tell me that's all there is, you know, there's just the material world and nothing more, I feel like I'm talking to somebody who's out on a dark, foggy night with a tiny little torch, shining the torch into the darkness and
uh-huh.
imagining that the little bit that they can see with the torch is all there is.
Right.
And forgetting all the rest of it that lies outside. So
I believe
altered states of consciousness are extremely important, and they tell us a lot about the mystery of consciousness. And the people who are best equipped to work with altered states and use them most effectively for the exploration of the wider reality are indeed shamans in
mm-hmm,
tribal and hunter-gatherer
mm-hmm.
societies. They're the masters mm-hmm. of this spiritual technology.
Absolutely. Well, you know, the Kogi use a form of the coca leaf continuously, the shamans do, and they choose the young ones, and then they put them in a dark place for months and months, and they're brought up to be shamans.
Yeah.
And you've got the New Zealand Maori, and, I mean, there's so many indigenous tribes. In fact, your movie Earth Pilgrims takes us on one of those journeys up the Peruvian mountains, I believe it is, on their
exactly.
annual journey.
Exactly.
So these are important, very important cultures and wisdom teachings that we are losing rapidly because society is just mushrooming into these hidden realms and they're wiping them out.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, society, the powers that be, have wiped out indigenous cultures throughout time. And
yeah.
we've kind of written it off as, well, they were just after lands or something. But, you know, infected blankets and razor blades to the American Indians wasn't a very nice thing to do.
No,
and,
horrendous thing to do.
I think that there are reasons why all of these things are going on, and it has to do with what you're talking about, a quantum reality in which our time is intersecting with perhaps many other times, and we're being controlled and pushed and pulled in a very dark direction so that eventually that there will be total control.
Yeah, it's happening at a frightening pace. And
yeah, frightening and, pace.
I guess it was my awareness and concerns about these issues that fed into the story I wrote with Entangled. I felt that I was exploring ideas that were so edgy and so extraordinary that the best way to present them was in the form of fiction rather than in the form of nonfiction to wrap
yes.
it all up in a fast-moving story with compelling characters, but at the same time to explore extraordinary ideas about the nature of reality, the nature of time, and the nature of good and evil, and to bring forth truths that it might be impossible to bring forth in the non-fiction format. And there was something else that I need to tell you
yes.
About this novel, which is that the fundamental plot of the novel and the two principal characters and the battle of good and evil, the demonic force and the angelic force called the Blue Angel and sometimes Our Lady of the Forest, came to me in a series of visions in Brazil when I was drinking ayahuasca.
Oh my goodness!
Over a series of five sessions spread out over 2 weeks, I was shown the whole drama and jeopardy of this story, and I
wow.
received a very clear instruction at the end of these sessions, which was go home and write this story, write it now. It's important.
Oh my God.
It's your responsibility. You've got to do it.
Wow.
And And, you know, this is what totally changed my direction from nonfiction into fiction and into novel writing, was this extraordinary revelation under the influence of ayahuasca. And I would say that the blue angel in my story is really the mother goddess of our planet, and she is the intelligence, the entity who is pure love and truth that lies behind ayahuasca, who the Native American Indians in the Amazon jungle refer to as Our Lady of the Forest. Every shaman in the Amazon will tell you that there's an intelligence that simply uses the ayahuasca brew as a means to reach humanity. And they all see this as a female intelligence, as a mother goddess who has great love for our planet, for the jungles, for the old growth forests, and for human freedom, and who has played a role throughout history in trying to influence humanity for the better. One thing that became very clear to me about supernatural realms and supernatural entities, both on the side of darkness and on the side of light, is that they cannot intervene directly in our physical realm. The way that they intervene is through influencing human consciousness. And in this way, we stand, I believe, at the fulcrum of a cosmic struggle between the forces of dark and the forces of light, between the forces of good and the forces of evil. And because that is so, and because we are creatures that are part matter and part spirit, the choices that we make may not only affect us, but may affect the cosmos as a whole. In ways that we can hardly imagine. So you know, all of this really became clear to me in a series of visionary experiences. And in some ways, writing this novel, I was gifted with narrative skills, and those narrative skills have been part of my life all my life since I was a child. But my narrative abilities were taken in a wholly new direction by these experiences. It's quite interesting, actually, if you look at the role that ayahuasca is beginning to play. She is coming out of the jungles of the Amazon. Ayahuasca ceremonies, which, by the way, are completely legal throughout South America, there they respect the right of religious freedom. And this is regarded as a religious sacrament and as a medicine. Uh-huh. And anyone may drink ayahuasca freely throughout South America. But not only there now, ayahuasca has reached out into North America. In three states, in Oregon and in California and in New Mexico, there have been Supreme Court rulings which allow members of the Brazilian churches that use ayahuasca. These churches mix shamanism together with some elements of Christianity, and they're called the Santo Daime Church and the Unia de Vegetal. They've actually won the battle already in the United States. And again, I take this as a positive sign that in the U.S. you do have this wonderful thing called a constitution, which we don't have in Britain. And the constitution does guarantee religious freedom. And so although ayahuasca contains a Schedule I so-called drug, I would never refer to it as that. I would always refer to it as a medicine, dimethyltryptamine. Members of these churches have been given an exception and are allowed to drink ayahuasca freely without fear of being raided or sent to prison or having their lives ruined by the state. And in this way, the opportunity to drink ayahuasca is being extended to more and more people around the world. And it's very intriguing. In the Amazon, they'll always tell you that the entity behind ayahuasca is pure love. But sometimes love involves tough love. Huh. It involves showing an individual weaknesses and dark sides in their own character and showing it very, very clearly. Yeah. And this is one of the things that ayahuasca does. And that's why I know that it's a loving entity, because it's happened to me. She's shown me aspects of my own behavior, harsh words that I've spoken to others, little acts of petty cruelty or jealousy that have caused harm and difficulty. And she's shown me this in such a clear and unavoidable light that I've been forced to confront these aspects of myself. And that's where the real work begins, which is changing a lifetime of bad habits and making oneself a better person. And virtually everybody who drinks ayahuasca sooner or later has this experience of wishing to improve their behavior in the world and developing a new sense of the importance of the environment and particularly of the great jungles and rainforests, which are so under threat now. But in addition to that, ayahuasca also gives a creative boost. I know of a couple of geneticists who went down to the Amazon to drink ayahuasca and were given incredible insights into the nature of DNA that helped them directly with their work. There are fantastic visionary artists in the United States, Alex Gray of the Chapel of the Sacred Mirrors in New York State, and Martina Hoffman and Robert Venosa in Boulder, Colorado, who've done extensive work with ayahuasca, and this has totally revolutionized their art, and their art becomes a glimpse into the hidden realms. Their art in itself becomes a consciousness-raising vehicle. And in my case, well, I'm not an artist and I'm not a geneticist, but ayahuasca gave me a story and told me to go write it. And that's what I did. And that story's called Entangled, The Eater of Souls.
And it is a wonderful book. I mean, wonderful. In fact, there were times when I felt that the demons or whoever was chasing it in the moment was right at my heels. I mean, snapping. And I was getting so excited. I thought, oh, my God, they're not going to live. They can't live. And oh, my God, what's going to happen? I mean, it just took me way beyond the edge of excitement. And, you know, you hope that your characters that you've come to love in the book, as I do all of the characters, especially the Blue Angel, you want them all to succeed. And, of course, we're left with the opening to what comes next, and I can't wait to find out.
Yeah, because this is the first volume of two, and just as every chapter ends on a cliffhanger, so also does the end of the first volume. And I'm writing the second volume at the moment, which
good,
will bring,
good. Please don't stop.
No, I won't stop. The story will be brought to a conclusion. My characters have become totally real to me, and I can't leave them in limbo, which is literally where Leone goes at the end of the first book. Their adventure continues, and it is an adventure story, and it is real danger in the story. Both of these young women from the beginning are fighting for their lives, but they're also fighting for something else. Firstly, both of them have dark sides to their own character, and part of their evolution is overcoming the dark side in themselves. Secondly, that they, despite that, they are fundamentally on the side of good, and ultimately a story of the triumph of good over evil, rather than the other way around.
Let us hope that it's a mirror for our own path.
And I want to tell you one other thing about this story, which has been very strange. I've told you already how it came to me as a kind of download in visionary states. And as a writer, this meant something very different from the way that I work with nonfiction, where when I'm writing nonfiction, I'm in a very intellectual state of mind. But with this book, I found that rather than focusing in very hard and intellectualizing everything, what I needed was just to let go and allow the story to flow through me. And then it would come through true and strong. The moment that I tried to intellectualize the process, I would slow down and grind to a halt, and I would have to go back a few pages and find where I'd taken the wrong turn and continue, because the whole narrative was already inside me. And this is the strange thing. The vision that I was given of the Neanderthals was very specific. I was shown that they had red hair. This is back in 2006, by the way, when I had these visions and started writing the book. I was shown that they had red hair. I was shown that they had interbred with human beings. And I was shown that they were creatures of compassion and pure love. Now, at that time, in 2006, the scientific view of Neanderthals was completely different.
Yeah.
We had no idea what color their hair was. There was no notion that they had ever interbred with human beings. And they were considered to be knuckle-dragging ape men, you know, sort of thuggish brutes. This whole picture in science has changed dramatically in the last 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And just this month, there's been a huge amount of new information out about the Neanderthals, which completely supports what I've written about them in the book. New evidence has emerged from the past that the Neanderthals were indeed compassionate and loving creatures, that they looked after their injured, their elderly, their blind, their sick, long past the point when they ceased to be physically viable on their own. Furthermore, the Neanderthal genome has been sequenced, and we now know that the Neanderthals did have red hair, just as I saw them. Indeed, we know another thing, that Neanderthals did interbreed with human beings, and that 4% of modern human genes are owed to the Neanderthals. And in fact, the gene for red hair is a Neanderthal gene.
Wow.
So it's told me that whatever the strange process I went through to get and deliver this story, in some mysterious way, I touched on ground truth.
Oh, yes. Well, you know, Terence McKenna said that when we go to these other realms, that we almost have an obligation to bring back these eternal truths, not necessarily the huge ones, but the ones that we can bite on, the ones that we can digest and that will help other people. And obviously, you're doing that.
Thank you. And some of those truths, as the late, great, wonderful Terence McKenna, who is one of my all-time heroes. What a brilliant man. What a gift Terence McKenna was to this planet.
Yes.
And how sad it is that we lost him so prematurely. But just to hear his voice, speaking his words, is an enlightening process. Amazing. And I'm glad that so many of his talks are recorded and that we can still hear Terence's voice. And
Jay Widener just came out with another one of his videos, too, that has some unseen footage of Terence. Looking into. It's priceless.
Priceless. He was an incredible genius and a beautiful, beautiful human being who brought a new insight into the world. And I'll always remember one thing that he said about shamans in the very few remaining tribal and hunter-gatherer societies in our world. And what Terence said was that they are the ones who've kept the flame of a tremendous mystery burning.
Yes.
Which we in the West have utterly neglected and forgotten. We've abandoned our birthright as conscious creatures. We've sold out to technology and the material realm and comfort and so-called security. We've sold out the most fundamental aspects of ourselves. And if we don't take a turning back towards repossessing sovereignty over our consciousness and asserting the right of individual adults to make decisions about their own lives, then I honestly believe we're lost as a species.
Absolutely. And isn't it interesting that he used the idea of, that he came up with the idea of time wave zero, which overlays the I Ching and all of its peaks and valleys, which happened to coincide with the ending of 2012. And according to him, that's when we go into absolute zero of novelty, which is pure novelty.
Pure novelty,
Which is not necessarily a good thing. You know, novelty could be one of the most novel periods was when Hitler was reigning.
Well, yes, that's right. Novelty is not always good, and it may be that we will pass through a dark time. We are already in a dark time.
We are in.
It's clear to see that, and the question now is, what do we do about it? Do we simply accept that, or do we work for the better and work for change? And the one thing when people ask me about this that I always tell them, and I try to put this into practice as far as I can in my own life, although we're all fallible and we're all weak. But the one thing we can do we do not have power over the whole of society. As individuals, we often seem very weak and very ineffective against the massive forces at work in society. But the one thing we do have power of choice over is what we do with our own lives and our own words and our own actions. And also, despite the threatening tendency of the state to punish us with prison sentences for exploring our own consciousness, ultimately we must regain sovereignty over our own consciousness. This issue of sovereignty over consciousness touches on the visionary substances, which have been in use as sacred plants for tens of thousands of years, and which our state will punish us with lengthy prison sentences for even possessing. To my mind, the state has no business inside the inner sanctum of our own heads.
I agree with you more.
This is an area where the state should not go, and by allowing the state to enter that inner sanctum and tell us what we may and may not experience with the miracle of our own consciousness, we have again been misled into a habit of obedience that can only be harmful to us. I actually see the issue of sovereignty over consciousness as a fundamental human right. I think it's as important or more important a struggle in many ways than other recognized human rights struggles, such as the civil rights movement, such as women's liberation, such as gay liberation. These are all very, very important human rights that have been won during the past century. But the one right that has not even been addressed is the right of responsible adults to complete sovereignty over their own consciousness. And I feel very strongly about this. This needs to be recognized at a national and international level as a fundamental human right. Of course, if our behavior in altered states of consciousness causes us to cause trouble or damage or harm to others, then I don't deny that the state has a role to play. But while we act responsibly and privately in our own homes, in ceremonial gatherings, to explore the miracle of consciousness that this universe has gifted with us, the state must stay out of that. And this is a very important development for the future.
Well, and we're also all aware of the fact that the military, whose budgets are limitless due to black operations, have perfected the art of mind control to a fine art.
A very fine art. Fine art, so that it's so sophisticated that that we don't even know our minds are being controlled. We think it's our thoughts that we're thinking, and in fact it's all manipulated. It's all manipulated and controlled. But I do see some rays of hope coming through. One thing that I see amongst young people in the United States, in Britain, throughout the world, is a new energy and a new awakening. I'm not speaking of every young person, but I find more and more very switched on, very conscious, very aware, very concerned young people who know what's going on and are trying to do something about it. And interestingly, after, 40 years of this terrible terrorist operation called the War on Drugs, we are now beginning to see some new research being done into the visionary substances. For example, ecstasy has just recently been the subject of serious mainstream scientific research as a possible answer to post-traumatic stress disorder. And that actually is with soldiers returning from the battlefields in the Gulf and in Afghanistan, and it's proved to be astonishingly effective in healing PTSD. Likewise, there's been new studies, and again, these are fully approved legal studies with psilocybin and people suffering from terminal cancers. And again, it's been found that the psilocybin experience has relieved them from the anxiety of looming death, and instead of seeing death as a darkness enclosing in around them, many of these individuals now see it as the beginning of the next great adventure. So a number of very positive developments are taking place. It's just the beginning. It's just a trickle at the moment. But against all the bad things that are happening in society, I do see some positive trends underway.
Well, that's good, because we need all the positive we can get, and your book Entangled certainly brings to light the age old battle, which we're fighting right now. It really is the battle, and it is within our grasp to change the future destiny of mankind, I believe.
And yeah, I think it's important that we recognize that. This is a matter that's under our control. And this touches on the issue of 2012, you know, the ancient Maya with their cyclical calendar system, where this was a shamanic culture. This was a culture that was using visionary experiences to chart the depths of time, to move forward into the future and back into the past. And the calendar that they created is a kind of wake-up call for us. I don't think it's an accident that this calendar culminates on the 21st of December 2012. I think we're being told by an ancient and wise culture that we stand in great jeopardy just now, but that the jeopardy need not result in disaster, that it is possible for the end of this calendar cycle simply to be the beginning of the next one, that we go into an upsurge, that we wake up, that a new form of consciousness dawns. And like I say, I do see signs of that happening everywhere around the world.
Good, good. You know, that's one of the reasons I love so much having people like you on the show, because many of us don't have that experience of traveling around the world and to the ancient sites, and of seeing the fact that there actually are changes and people are awakening and there is light at the end of the tunnel, because we just see the darkness of our daily lives.
Yeah.
And it looks as if the toilet's been flushed and we're all going down the tubes.
Well, you know, people are ground down with debt and paying off massive interest payments, usurious rates of interest to greedy corporations. And let's not underestimate the climate of fear and hatred and suspicion that is being deliberately generated in the world by governmental and military and industrial forces and by politicians. I have no respect for any politician in the Western world right now. To my mind, they're just all liars and thieves who
agree with you.
who will use anything at all to keep themselves in power. And if that means spreading hatred and fear and suspicion, then that's what they're going to do, even if it brings our whole world down in flames. When it's obvious that what's needed is love. This is the answer to everything. It's the answer to everything. No more hatred, no more suspicion, no more fear. You know, there was ancient wisdom also in the Christian teachings. When Christ said, turn the other cheek, he really meant it. If we respond to hatred and violence towards ourselves with more hatred and violence, then all we're doing is feeding that cycle of negativism and darkness.
Yes.
And somebody
has
to have the courage to break with it.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Because what we're doing to another, we're doing to ourselves. As you said, everything is entangled. In quantum physics, I am you, and you are me. So, you know, if there's something I see in somebody else that I don't like, that's something that's being mirrored back to me for a reason. And I need to look inside myself and see, well, what is it within me that I have not accepted about myself that I'm seeing over there? Because I need to learn how to accept that other person for who they are.
Exactly, exactly. And you know, there's a fundamental truth in what you're saying there. These are learning experiences that are being offered to us. And also, it's just common sense. The last thing you want to do with a fire is add more fuel to it. What you want to do is douse it down. And allow peace to come back into the world. There's all these artificial divisions are being created, you know, this horrible thing called nationalism and patriotism. I have no time for patriotism. It was rightly called the last refuge of the scoundrel. It's one of the most manipulated emotions in
Absolutely.
Our societies today, and it artificially divides one human being from another. Are we Muslim? Are we Christian? Are we black? Are we white? Do we live in the East? Do we live in the West?
Yep.
We're all the
yep.
same. We're all the
yep.
same. We're brothers and sisters. There's no difference yep. between us. No human life is more valuable or less valuable than another. These are all precious gifts of the universe.
Yes.
And what is needed is love.
Yes.
Love
yes.
is the
absolutely.
Answer.
Absolutely right. You know, if you go to another country or starving people in Africa or China or any other country, Russia, the language of love speaks. We don't need to speak each other's language. You just can smile and you get that person.
It works miracles. It works miracles.
Absolutely.
And
we
are all one. Then you discover that these people who seem so very different actually are just the same as you, that they have the same hopes, the same fears,
absolutely.
The same ambitions, the same capacity for love as we do. And what a beautiful world it could be if we could just really learn that lesson.
And we're going to
unite.
Have to.
Yeah,
we're going to have to,
or we're going to go down the tubes. It's as simple as that.
Yes, I mean, we're destroying everything natural that exists. And we're just on the verge of self-extinction right now.
Yeah, very close.
Whether 2012 comes about and turns out to be significant or not, we're running out of everything. We're destroying the rainforests, the oceans, the land. We're dumping chemicals in. I mean, it's coming out of our pores practically.
Yeah, yeah,
and
absolutely. What is happening in the rainforests is just unbelievably wrong.
Criminal.
It's
criminal.
An incredible, incredible evil that's being done there. This precious resource filled with wisdom, filled with plants that are teachers to us, being cut down and turned into soya bean farms to feed cattle so we can have more hamburgers. It's insane. It's absolutely insane.
And not just any soybeans, genetically modified soybeans.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. How can this, you know, we have to ask ourselves, how can this madness continue? And that's why the theme of my book is the battle of good against evil played out over time on the human plane.
Yeah.
It's the fundamental issue of our times and we need to wake up to this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, it's clear that those with other agendas, the military and the governments and the powers that be and the Illuminati, if you will, the Bilderbergs and the rest of them, all have their own agendas for power. And there's no heart and there's no love in those agendas.
No heart and no love at all. Completely
unmerciful. In fact, there's contempt.
Yes. Total
contempt.
And
hatred for us.
Yes. You're absolutely right. Contempt and
yes.
contempt and hatred for humanity is what fuels these dark powers that run our societies.
Yes, and it's all translated into smiley faces on the television, and it's really a travesty what the beautiful human soul is being subjected to, and we are vast beings of light, and I'm just thrilled that you're bringing this out into the open all over the world through your books and through your talking and sharing your own truth with us.
Thank you.
Because
Thank
well,
you.
We have to wake up. We have to wake up. There's just no time left. There really isn't any.
Yeah.
I mean, even if the Mayan word it didn't exist, we would have to come to the conclusion that we're running out of time.
Yeah, totally. We're at the 11th hour. We're standing right now at the edge of the abyss. And,
absolutely.
And we still have the choice not to step over it, but we have to take control of our own consciousness. We have to resist the mind control in our society. We have to recognize, as you say, that we are all beings of light, filled with this miraculous gift of consciousness, with the incredible opportunity to be born in a human body, to learn and to grow and to develop on this beautiful and amazing garden of a planet that we've been given.
You tell us a little, just briefly, about the Blue Angel. She's such a fascinating character, and the realms that she works in. I just loved the way she, you know, the way that you use various devices to introduce us to how things might work in the higher realms.
Yes. She exists in parallel realms that operate at a different vibration from our own. And she, as I said earlier, she She's a powerful supernatural being, but she cannot intervene directly in human affairs. She can't actually get down and roll up her sleeves and physically change things in this world.
Right.
The way that she does it is through finding heroic and gifted people and working with them, and that's why she chooses my two young heroines, Rhea and Leonie, living at opposite ends of history, to do battle with this demon and his forces traveling through time. And she wakens them up. She wakens them up to what their responsibility really is, and makes it clear to them that ultimately it's up to them. It's up to us humans to decide. And for me, she is the mother goddess of this planet. There's a strong feminine theme which runs through my novel. I knew from the beginning, from the moment I had the inspiration, that my central characters were women, not men. And that a return to the sacred feminine, to the divine feminine, is one of the things that we desperately need in the modern world.
Absolutely.
There's way too much testosterone-driven violence going on right now. And we need to return to the gentler, more nurturing side of ourselves. But I also show in this novel that women are strong and courageous beings.
Yes. And it's interesting too that the Silpa, who represents the demonic force, and it is demonic.
Yeah.
I mean, I was scared. is starting to break into our world, and it's starting to manifest through individuals, but it works largely through the unconsciousness of masses.
Yes, exactly.
Whereas the other, I was just thinking about this, whereas the Blue Angel, who represents the mother goddess, I guess you could say, she's working through these beautiful heroines.
Exactly.
And so it's really kind of the Goliath against the giants.
Yes. It is. It's exactly that. It's that story. It's a story of courage, and it's a story of love.
Well, it is a beautifully written and wonderful book, and you know, I can't say enough good things about it. I loved it. I couldn't put it down, and I'll probably reread it. And I can't wait for you to come out with the next one.
Okay.
I just love the characters. It just feels like. I know all these people and the archetypes and the metaphors that you put in there and the deep wisdom. It's just unparalleled.
Thank you so much for saying that and for seeing that in my book.
Well, you know, we will be out of time shortly, and I wanted to give you a few minutes to talk about, you know, where you are now, what you're doing, where people can find your books and your other works, and so on and so forth. So let's take a few minutes for you to do that.
Well, the first thing to say it was impossible for me to find a mainstream publisher for this book. Because it concerns altered states of consciousness, I think it was just mainstream publishers wouldn't touch it. But I found a courageous, small, independent publisher called the Disinformation Company in New York, who've published some other very important important works which go against the grain of our current society, They took Entangled on, but they don't have the resources of a big mainstream publishing company. So this book may be hard to find in some bookshops. And what I would ask readers who are interested to do, and indeed readers of my nonfiction to do, if they don't find the book in their bookstore, please get the bookstore to order it. That will make the bookstore wake up that there's some interest in the book. The title again is Entangled. The Eater of Souls, and I'm Graham Hancock, the author. So order it from your local bookstore if they don't carry it. And secondly, it is available on Amazon.com. If people want to buy books that way, that's also very helpful. And please, if you like the book, put a review up on Amazon.com and share the word with others. And for those who want to explore the book without putting up the $10 or whatever it is that it costs, then the answer is to go to my website, which is www.grahamhancock.com. That's GRAHAMHANCOCK.com. And there's a very prominent button right on the first page which leads you straight to the material on Entangled. And there you will find a video trailer runs for about a minute and 10 seconds, which introduces the book. You will also find four chapters, the first four chapters, available free online. And those can be read at your leisure. And if you find it interesting, please go ahead and order the book or buy it from Amazon.com and empower me to do more of this, because this is my path for the future.
Oh, absolutely. And I am so glad that you got on that path, Graham. It's a wonderful path, and this is so important, and this is a really important seminal work that you've written. And so I encourage everybody to read it, because I loved it, and I, like I said, I couldn't put it down. And yes, get it. Get it today. You're on tour right now, are you?
Yeah, I've been traveling in America for a month now.
Okay. And
I'm just at the very end of my tour. I'm in upstate New York at the moment. I have a presentation in Kingston in upstate New York tonight.
Okay.
That's on, all those details, by the way, are also on my website, grahamhancock.com, a list of all my events and appearances. And then tomorrow night, which is Sunday night, the 24th, I'm at the Chapel of the Sacred Mirrors in Wappinger Falls in upstate New York. This is Alex Gray's place. He did have his Chapel of the Sacred Mirrors in New York City, but he's now moved it to Wappinger Falls in upstate New York. And I'll be doing a major lecture with slides there tomorrow evening, sharing the research background behind Entangled, and very much looking
wonderful.
Into
Boy.
Visionary experiences.
That would be something not to miss.
Yeah, I hope that that people will come along. And as I say, the information there is also on my website. There's another button for my U.S. 2010 lecture tour, and you can find details of that there and link through to Alex Gray and be able to go and attend that presentation.
Wonderful. Well, Graham, do you have any last-minute things that you'd like to share with everybody before we have to leave?
The most important message that I have to share, although it's not easy, although it often goes against the grain of habits that we've got into in this life, is that love is the answer to everything, and that if we can banish hatred and fear and suspicion from our lives and replace them with love, then this beautiful world that we've been gifted with will continue to be a theater of experience for humanity, a place where we can learn and grow and develop and keep coming back to learn and grow and develop more, because I don't believe that death is the end. I'm certain that it's the beginning of the next great adventure, and I'm certain that we come back again and again into human bodies to learn the vital lessons that are available for us here.
Wow, that's beautiful. Thank you so much, Graham, and thank you for being on the show, and you can come back again and again, too, if you like.
I'd love to do that. Thank you so much
All
for having
right.
me on your show. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks a lot, Graham.
I really appreciate your questions and your open-minded spirit. Thank you.
Well, you're such a great beacon of light, and God bless you.
Thank you very much.
All right. Good night, everybody. Have a good trip.